If you don't recognize me, it's probably because you're not a college student. My name's Kyle Richter. I'm one of our pastors here, and I also help lead our college ministry, Veritas. I've been on staff since about 2008, and pretty much the entire time I've been working with college students. So it's a great pleasure to be here speaking to you all this morning. I'm excited to do so. To get us started, though, I want to take a look at a quick video clip from a show I think a lot of you will recognize, The Office.
Proceed to the highlighted route, then route guidance will begin.
When you use that thing, lets them know where you are at all times.
Who?
The government, spy satellites, private detectives, ex-girlfriends.
Make the next right turn.
How do they know? How does this know where to turn? That's very impressive.
Proceed straight.
Well, we're 0 for 6. Last chance is the Elmhurst Country Club. Other side of the lake on the southeast side.
I don't get it. I really don't get it. I thought this would work. Threw everything I had at that guy, nothing.
That's how it goes sometimes, you know? You lose everything, and everything falls apart, and eventually you die and no one remembers you.
That is a very good point, Dwight.
Make a right turn.
Wait, no. It means bear right.
No.
Up there.
It said right. It said take a right.
No, look. It means go up to the right, bear right, over the bridge, and hook up with 307.
Make a right.
Maybe it's
turn.
A shortcut, Dwight. It said go to the right.
It can't mean that. There's
look,
a lake
right
there.
I think it knows where it is going.
This is the lake.
The machine
this
knows.
This is the lake.
Stop yelling at me.
No, it's
stop
up there. There's no lake
here.
Remain calm. I have trained for this. Okay.
The machine knows, right? I was curious, and as it turns out, Michael Scott and Dwight Schrute aren't the only people following the machine into unknown places. Apparently, it happens all over the world. In 2011, a car full of people near Seattle trusted their GPS over an embankment, but doing so led them into the middle of a pond. In 2012, Japanese tourists in Australia were excited to find there was an alternate route to their destination. But when that alternate route led them into the Pacific Ocean, they weren't exactly thrilled. And finally, in 2016, just this past year, a woman driving at night claimed that fog was so thick she had to trust her GPS. The problem is her GPS led her into Lake Huron. No doubt these stories are funny, and in case you're wondering, nobody was seriously injured in any of them. But I share these stories because I think they give us a picture of reality that a lot of us don't often wrestle with. It's easy to follow the machine in life, isn't it? This kind of automated, collective, cultural voice that tells us what to do, what the good life is, how to get what you want. See, sometimes we go into autopilot to get through the daily grind, and we trust that the machine knows where it's going. My wife and I feel this all the time as young parents with three kids. We have three kids under five. Some days are so busy, it feels like all we can do is hang on for the ride. By the end of the day, when our heads finally hit our pillows, we've had no time for downtime or self-reflection, and tomorrow's coming, and we're going to do it all over again. You ever feel like that? Maybe you aren't a young parent. Instead, you're a teacher. A general contractor, a consultant, a doctor, a stay-at-home parent, a student, whatever it is. What's that daily grind, that day-in, day-out grind like for you? You see, our lives, our habits, and our practices, and our daily routines, they can easily become a machine that we follow. And that machine, it leads us places, places that have a dramatic impact on our lives. And whether we realize it or not, the machine is shaping us. It's shaping where we find purpose, where we find value, how to use our time, how we relate to God, how we relate to other people. And I don't know about you, but I haven't met many people that actually enjoy following the machine. So I don't know many people that actively think, gosh, you know what I'd really like? You know what I really love? to be an autopilot and not determine the direction of my life. But it happens, right? I mean, it happens to me, and I'm guessing that it happens to you too. Sometimes the machine, it takes us off road, doesn't it? We find ourselves going a little too fast at night through thick fog. And before we know it, we've driven down a boat ramp and into a lake. We find ourselves wondering how on earth we got there. What do we do now? How do we get out? Maybe that's how you feel today, this morning. Like you're stuck in a lake and you don't know how to get out. Every single one of us here this morning is following something. We're all following something. And if we're all following something, then we need to ask ourselves an important question. What are we following? Who are we following? Now, of course, different people answer that question different ways. That's what we'd expect. But if you're a Christian, you know how to answer the question, don't you? If I ask you to tell me what you want, what you love, what you long for, you know the expected answer. I mentioned working with college students. In my experience working with college students, they're pretty good at giving me the right answers. They're smart people. But every time I'm in a conversation with a college student about who or what they're following, and kind of sense that maybe they're just telling me what they think that I want to hear, I like to ask them a follow-up question. Okay, but what do your habits reveal? What do your routines say about who or what you're following? You see, most of these college students are great people. I'm not trying to trap them. I'm not asking questions because they're making terrible choices. But I ask that question, those questions, because most of them, in my experience, vastly underestimate how much their day-in, day-out habits really shape them. What about us? How is our habit of checking our email and calendars before we get out of bed in the morning? How is that shaping us? What is the amount of time that we spend in the morning getting ready in front of a mirror reveal about our priorities? What is our habit of watching television and surfing the internet or checking out social media at the same time say about our need to be entertained? What do our shopping habits say about where happiness is found? What do our exercise habits, our eating habits, what do they say about where we get our identity? You see, I'll be the first to admit, I don't think about these kinds of questions nearly enough. It's easier to just do, isn't it? It's easier to live out of habit. It's easier to live out of routine. Frankly, it's often easier to let the machine lead us. But if we stop to reflect, if we stop for a second and we're honest with ourselves, do we really want to follow the machine? Is that really the kind of life that we want? This morning, we're taking a break from our current sermon series, Risking Reality Through the Book of Hebrews, to look at a short story in the Gospel of Mark. If you brought your Bibles this morning, turn to Mark chapter 1, Mark chapter 1. We'll look at verses 16 through 20 together. And in our passage we're going to see this morning, Jesus has the audacity to think that he's worth following instead of the machine. Before we pick up the story, though, would you pray with me? Jesus, I pray that the words of my mouth, the meditation of my heart would be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Amen. Let's pick up in verse 16. Passing alongside the Sea of Galilee, Jesus saw Simon and Andrew, the brother of Simon, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. We know from the gospel stories that Jesus spent most of his life and ministry in the region of Galilee. It's the northern region of what is now the country of Israel. This past January, my wife and I actually had the opportunity to spend a few weeks in Israel with the seminary that I went to. And while we were in Israel, we had the chance to spend about 4 nights in the Galilee region, and more specifically on and around the Sea of Galilee. Here's a photo of it. It's a beautiful sea. It's actually a lake. It's called a sea, but it's a lake. It's about 6 miles wide, 14 miles long. To be honest, it's a lot smaller than I expected. But it's beautiful, and on a clear day, you can see the opposite coastline from every point around the lake. It's not as prevalent now, but in Jesus' day, the Sea of Galilee was home to a significant fishing industry. And so you can imagine, as Mark tells us, Jesus is walking along the shore, that the shore is filled with boats and docks and fishermen all around. That's the scene that Mark is painting for us here in verse 16. Let's pick up the story. And Jesus said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you become fishers of men." And immediately they left their nets and followed him. Going on a little farther, he saw James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, who were in the boat mending the nets. And immediately he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired servants and followed him. So Jesus sees these four men. Four men, we're told, with established careers. Men with families and friends. Jesus sees them and he has the audacity to say to them, "Follow me. Follow me." It's kind of a provocative command if we think about it, isn't it? I mean, as far as we know, these guys had a pretty decent life. They owned their own equipment. They owned their own boats. Some of them even employed other workers. And so for the first century, these guys were doing okay. So what did Jesus know that he could give them that was far better than what they already had? What did Jesus know that he could give these four men that was far better than what they already had? Well, Mark tells us in this passage that Jesus reoriented their purpose in life. In the early 1960s, President John F. Kennedy was touring the NASA Space Center in Cape Canaveral, Florida. And as the story goes, while he's on a tour, he sees a man with a broom, carrying a broom down a hallway. And he interrupts his tour, and he goes over to the man and introduces himself and says, "Hey, what do you do here?" And the guy, kind of collecting himself, realizing he's talking to the President of the United States, he says, "Well, Mr. President, I'm helping put a man on the moon." See, to everyone else, this guy was just a janitor cleaning a building. To be honest, if it were me that day, I probably wouldn't have stopped myself. Isn't it obvious what he's doing? But that janitor's sense of purpose at NASA was far beyond cleaning a building. He wasn't cleaning floors, he was putting a man on the moon. He was a part of making history. You see, Jesus knew that God is telling an incredible story in our world. And so we can follow the machine, or we can find our place in that story. That's what Jesus is doing that day with the disciples. He's inviting them into something far greater than their own lives. Look again at verse 17. And Jesus said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you become fishers of men." What do you think the disciples woke up that morning thinking about? What were their daily habits and routines, the rhythms of their weeks and months? What was the machine like 2,000 years ago? I'm not exactly sure, but surely they had family issues. Surely they experienced financial burdens and work stress and political pressures. You see, no doubt there was a machine then, like there's a machine now, a day in, day out grind to get through life. You think they ever got sick of it? I'm sure they did. I don't know. Do you? See, I don't think we're that much different. But Jesus that day with the disciples, he offers them a better way. He says something to them that's provocative. He says something that's unexpected to them. He says, "Follow me and I'm going to do something in your life. Follow me and I'm going to give your life greater significance and meaning. Follow me and I'm going to make you become fishers of men." See, Jesus isn't using some cute metaphor just to fit the fishing motif. But Jesus is making a claim. He's making a claim that only Jesus can make. Follow me and I will radically change your life. Follow me and I will radically transform your life, he says. You see, Jesus isn't telling these guys to follow an idea. He's not telling them to follow a teaching. He's saying to follow a person. But not just a person. Jesus is telling them to follow a person who claims to be God. Look at what Jesus says in Mark's gospel, later in Mark's gospel. This is chapter 8, verses 34 and 35. And calling the crowd to him with his disciples, Jesus said to them, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it." You see, that's a God statement. That's the kind of claim only God can make. Whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. But this is exactly what Jesus is inviting the disciples into. You see, from that day forward, these disciples were no longer ordinary fishermen. Jesus had brought them into something far greater, a far greater story. What story are you living for? Have you ever asked yourself that? What's your purpose in life? Maybe it's furthering your own reputation, advancing your career, chasing the next promotion, moving up in the ladder. Is that kind of the goal that dictates our day in, day out habits? Is that really the machine that we want to follow? And maybe our purpose is our children. So we plow through the day in, day out grind of shuttling our kids around to sporting events and dance recitals and extracurricular activities. Maybe our purpose is accumulating wealth. You see, I don't think Jesus would call any of these things bad things in and of themselves, but I wonder if Jesus is offering something bigger. I wonder if Jesus is offering something better, something more lasting. See, sometimes we miss out on the promotion. Kids grow up and eventually leave. Wealth can disappear with one bad investment or a major health crisis. If you and I know how quickly these things disappear, surely Jesus does too, right? See, Jesus knows how unsatisfying the machine is far better than we do. And that's exactly why he offers something more. That's why Jesus is offering something better. Now, don't hear what I'm not saying. Working hard, making money, being devoted to your family. These are great things, legitimate things to do in life. But catch this. They're a terrible machine to follow. See, Jesus tells the disciples he's going to make them into fishers of men. He's got a story to tell and a part for them to play. But what's the part that he's given us to play? What about you as a mom or a dad? What if you saw parenting as an incredible opportunity to disciple your kids, to mold and shape their love for Jesus? What if people in your workplace, at your job, what if they became Christians because they noticed a difference in the way that you work or a difference in the way that you're living your life? What if people notice a difference in the way that you sacrifice your time? What if people in your life notice a difference in the way that you give and the way that you spend your money? A difference in the way that you handle your pain and your suffering? What if people notice a difference in the way that you talk about your spouse? Or the way that you enjoy the good things in life, but not in excess? See, wouldn't living with that kind of purpose be far better than just following the machine? How much better will the ordinary things of our lives be when we see them as part of the greater story that God is telling in the world? That's the kind of purpose that Jesus was inviting the disciples into. And if Jesus radically transformed their lives, and he's radically transformed so many other lives over the last 2,000 years, then what makes you think that he can't do the same in your own? See, when we follow Jesus, Jesus tells us that he's going to reorient our purpose. But he says he's going to do it over time. He says he's going to do it through a process. What relationship do you have in your life that hasn't taken some amount of time to develop, some amount of effort to develop? A relationship with Jesus is no different. For most of us, a relationship with Jesus doesn't happen in an instant. It didn't happen overnight. For some of you, it has. But for a lot of us, it didn't. Jesus knows that. He knows that coming out of the machine is a process. And the good news with us is that Jesus is patient with us in the midst of that process. He's gracious with us. He forgives us along the way. You see, I don't know what Jesus' transformation looks like in your life specifically. But that's the great thing about Jesus. Jesus isn't calling us into a cookie-cutter mold. Jesus has the audacity to claim that he's worth following over the machine because he knows who he is and he knows what he wants to do in our lives. And so he's inviting us, he's calling us into a relationship with him, to invest our lives in him. And he says that when we do, he's going to reorient our purpose. And it's going to happen over time. It's going to happen through a process. Jesus not only reorients our purpose, he also reorganizes our priorities. Look again at 17 through 20. And Jesus said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you become fishers of men." And immediately they left their nets and followed him. Going on a little farther, he saw James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, who were in their boat mending the nets. And immediately he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired servants and followed him. Simon and Andrew leave their nets behind. James and John leave their dad standing in a boat, something that would have been almost blasphemous in a first century context where honoring your parents was among the highest of values. Why? Why did they do it? Why did they leave their nets? Why did they leave their father? Well, they did it because they experienced the reality that when Jesus meets us, he calls us out of the machine into a whole new set of priorities in life. You see, the voice of our culture, it tells us to seize the day and live for yourself. Grab whatever makes you feel good. Say yes to anything and everything that pleases you because you're the best person to live for. Grab all you can get out of life. You need this, do this, want this, demand this. Right, left, start, stop, up, down. That's a machine. Before you know it, you find yourself in a lake wondering, how do we get out? Jesus' message is completely different, though. Jesus says that if we want the life we've always wanted, if we want the life that we were created for, then we've got to stop listening to the voice of the machine to listen to the voice of our Maker. It's kind of uncomfortable, though, isn't it? We find security in the machine. Maybe the machine is all we've ever known. Let me ask you something. Think about your past week just for a second. Think about the things that you prioritized in your last week that caused you stress. The things that brought worry and anxiety and frustration into your life. Was that just the voice of the machine? Is it the voice of the machine speaking? Get worried because if you lose this, it's all over. Feel overwhelmed because if your kid doesn't accomplish this, then they'll always be behind. Feel left out. Get angry. Get frustrated. Defend what's yours because if you lose this thing, if you disappoint that person, if you miss out on that opportunity, well, then it's all over. No one likes living life swimming upstream in a constant river of anxiety and frustration and regret, but that's the machine. It chews us up and spits us out. Jesus is offering something better. Jesus is offering something better so that these things don't control us, so that these things don't have power over us. And he does so by calling us into a relationship with him and reorganizing our priorities. Now, to be fair, it's not always comfortable when he does this. I mean, think about the disciples. Think about what he said to them. Following me, he says, means being willing to put me before your boats, your career. Following me means being willing to put me before your own family. Those aren't small things, are they? It's not always easy to let Jesus reorganize our priorities. But Jesus says that it's only when we do that that we experience what real freedom is. Just the other day, I got an email from a guy in our church, and I found it so encouraging. He was sharing with me about how much Jesus had changed his life, how much Jesus had changed his family's life, and specifically talking about the ways in which Jesus was changing their family's priorities. It was so encouraging for me. I got his permission. I want to read a section of it. It's kind of long, but it's good. And talking about how Jesus changed their priorities, he says this. He says, for example, my time. Even when I don't always want to, I give up my Friday mornings to be at men's group. On Wednesday nights, we give up family time so that our son can be involved in a small group, even when it's one more thing on the calendar and one more thing to drive across town for. He goes on, Jesus changes how we prioritize our finances too. There are lots of ways we could use our money, pay debts, save for trips, other fun stuff, but it's important for us to tithe that money first. Jesus has also changed the kinds of entertainment I enjoy. Following him means giving up certain shows or video games. Sometimes I'm the awkward guy at work that hasn't seen the latest HBO show. Jesus also shapes the way I prioritize and serve my family. For instance, I love watching the English Premier League. It's soccer, but all their games are on Saturday mornings. That's a prime time for our family to hang out. Instead of pushing my family off for what I want, Jesus helps me to focus on their needs. See, I love what he said because that's real life, isn't it? I mean, that's ordinary stuff. That's not rocket science. They're ordinary things of life, but Jesus is shaping this family right here in our church in significant ways through the mundane things of life. It's a great picture of letting Jesus reorganize our priorities, even when sometimes it means it's going to cost us something. What's it look like for you? What are the priorities in your life that you might need to let Jesus reorganize? What are the things in your life you might need to say no to so that Jesus can be your most important yes? Jesus is calling all of us out of slavery to the machine into a relationship with our Maker. Why not let our Maker make you into something he wants you to be? As the music team comes up, I'll close with this thought. I don't know what you're following in your life. I won't pretend to. But I do know this. In my own experience, following the machine is a lousy way to live. For some of us here, Christianity itself has become a machine, a set of beliefs to argue about, religious things to do, rules to follow. But Jesus offers us something far better. Jesus offers us a relationship with himself. Jesus is calling each of us out of a big, stinky fishing boat to a vast shore with all sorts of possibilities. At the end of the day, though, the only way to not be driven by the voice of the machine is to be driven by the voice of someone else. It can't be both. So do you want to be just another person following the machine? Or would you rather climb out of that boat and live a life transformed forever by a relationship with your Creator? Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great to get out of the machine and into a place in God's story, your place in God's story? That's where we really find the life we were created for. 2,000 years ago, Jesus told these disciples that he was going to make them into something. He was going to make them into fishers of men, and he did. The world changed. We're still talking about it today. If Jesus really did what he said he'd do in their lives, he'll do it in your life too. Amen.